You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This episode of See Here is brought to you by...
To episode 13 of the See Here podcast. My name is Morris, and on the other side of a Skype connection, we have from Bath, Mr. Bernard Stickwell. Good evening. No, good night to you, Bernard.
It is almost good night, yes. So I should be going to bed when this is all done.
It's good night from him, and it's good night from me. Good night.
Wow. And how many people are going to get that, Morris?
Yeah, oh, well, anyone in the comments.
You and I.
Anyone in the comments. Hang on. Wendy, don't talk. You haven't been introduced yet. that's a local joke. I'll explain that later. In Seoul, South Korea, Mr. Tim Merrill. Good morning to you, Tim.
Morning. How are you?
Look, all the better for hearing your dulcet tones. And in Chicago, the over-anxious, but absolutely wonderful and lovely, the pounding princess, the drummer who makes J.K. Simmons look like a nice guy, Ms. Wendy Freeman. Hello,
hey,
Wendy.
Fred. Yes.
Wow, we're all back. We're all reunited. This is so exciting. This is episode 13 of See Here. If you've not heard us before, we discuss music-related films. Why? A, because no one else is doing it, and B, because we love them. Anyway, what we're going to be doing on this episode of the show, it's 1 year since we started this, and we started the show last year talking about the G.G. Allen and the Murder Junkies documentary, and we're going for another film that's similarly as serious. It's called Air Guitar Nation. No, I joke. We are talking about Air Guitar Nation, but this is as far away from the G.G. Allen and the Murder Junkies, G.G. Allen and the Murder... Start again. Mr. Tongue and Mr. Lips can't get their act together. G.G. Allen and the Murder Junkies documentary.
Hated.
Thank you. This is as far away from that as you can possibly get. This is a nice light bit of froth. Air Guitar Nation. We'll get into that fairly shortly. But just very briefly going around the table, how are all you wonderful people? We've all been on break and stuff like that. Bernie and Wendy, you're in the Northern Hemisphere and is probably freezing your behinds off. How are you doing in general?
Okay, yeah, pretty good. It's cold. It's not snowing out, but it's almost snowing. Yeah, it's all good. You know, I'm drinking a beer. I went to a record fair today, bought some records.
Ooh, what'd you get?
I'm here, but as the video link is turned off, I got the first Noi LP. Turned on. There we go. I got the first Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers LP.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I got the Wailing Ultimate, which is a compilation of Homestead bands from the 80s.
I remember that.
Squirrel Bait, Naked Ray Gun.
Yeah.
All that kind of good stuff.
I used to have that years ago.
Ray Gun from my car.
Well, that's, you know, actually, believe it or not, going back, G.G. Allen was put out on Homestead, too.
Was he really? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I mean, there was a. No, it was just him before his band, but it was, yeah, because I had that, it was a Homestead compilation that came out after that one.
Oh, okay. It's like writing real songs?
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
I also got Taboo by Arthur Lyman, classic Exotica LP.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. There we go. And I got a compilation of 18 gouging instrumentals, 58 to 65, called Concussion, which is great kind of things, you know? So that sort of thing. So,
safaris, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah, adventures, that kind of twangy, guitar-y, sort of R&B, rock and roll-y kind of stuff, you know? So, pretty good. Pretty good. So I've been having a good day so far, and hopefully it's going to continue right now. So.
It will. Mm. Vendela, 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 tell me, how are you, sweetheart?
Oh, my gosh. So I have an acting audition.
Oh, what? Is this why you didn't get the headshot?
Yeah. So, like, I got called up. Someone recommended me to a casting director where they're doing a play where one of the lead characters is a female drummer, and they need someone who can play drums as well as they can act. Which, that would not be me, because I've never acted in anything. So I had to, my audition is on Monday, but they actually set me up with a meeting with an acting coach yesterday, which I think sounds promising. I think it sounds nice, like, when they're doing that for me, you know? So, yeah, my character would essentially be, like, a washed up, like, Seattle punk rock drummer who is in a band with her sister. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think I could pull that off.
It's not a million miles from the truth, is it? I think so.
I don't watch the punk, yes.
Yay.
So how much of the play would you have dialogue? Is it just like more drumming and less acting, or was it like a good mix? Would you be like a strong part of the play?
Yeah, like it's a good mix. So and it's at some, you know, at certain points I'm sort of like, you know, yelling at people while I'm drumming and that type of thing, so I could do that too.
So you just invoke your inner Buddy Rich.
Mm-hmm. Yes, invoke my J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, indeed. Ooh. Oh my God, that film is going to... They're going to get you to watch it again, you know, and you said you couldn't bring yourself to watch it a second time.
I can't. I loved it. I loved it the once, but it's so funny because I take that movie so personally.
I read a criticism. I mean, like, there's Facebook the last few days has just been full of people who've been saying, just seen it. Absolutely loving it. But there was one guy who'd put up a post saying, I'm not interested in seeing this. My mate, who's a drum instructor, saw it and took offense because he said that drum teachers are not like that, or music instructors are not like that.
Of course they're not.
It's an individual story. It's one person's story. It's not a damning indictment of the entire music teaching fraternity. It's just this one misguided guy's story, for Christ's sake.
And regardless of music teachers or whatever, we've all had one boss, one teacher, one somebody who pushed us until we fucking cried. You know, all had one ball buster in our lives, you know? So take it for what you will. It's a story of determination.
Lucky if you have one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
This will be a see here film before too long.
I was just waiting for him to carve a swastika in that kid's ass.
And then the kid would poop on him.
Yeah, exactly.
Turning into the trashy trio.
do you saw
now
Oz?
We go to Japan.
No, Oz. Have you seen Oz?
Yeah, of course. I haven't seen it for years, but yeah, of course.
No. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was waiting for him to carve a swastika into his ass, you know?
Yeah. Ah, okay. Yeah. Oh, that makes more sense now. All right.
It wasn't just like we normally talk about carving swastikas into asses, because that's like a regular part of See Here discussion.
Please, we don't normally like this. You know, we're really good family related.
Podcast. We'll be talking about a fun family related movie. So
we will be. Yeah. Sure. So Tim, anything else on your perspective?
Well, I've been listening to. I think Bernie. I think you might have heard them, Bernie, already. But have you guys? Checked out Goat yet?
I'm aware of them. I don't think I've heard like maybe one or two tracks, but
they're a band from Sweden, and they're like almost like a psychedelic Afro funk.
I did look at one of the links that you sent. That's it was like a few weeks ago. Yeah, I think I did.
World music. Yeah.
Yeah, they're good.
I've been really digging their the first album they put out, World Music, last year, and then they put out a new one, Commune, the new one. And, man, fantastic stuff. It's like, you know, it's almost like Sun Ra doing mushroom with Fela's, Africa 70 band, you know, like it's just that kind of bizarre, like, you know, trippy, resonant, I don't know, like it's almost half of it's almost like Can meets Afrofunk, you know, and it's really, really, really good. Like, I mean, I've been digging them a lot, and they're funny because live, they all wear masks. And it's like, you know, they're not really concerned with being rock stars at all. They're just more concerned with focusing on the music. And there's kind of a movement that's been going around for a while now. There's another band out of Portland, Oregon. They're called the Master Musicians of Bukkake. And they're really cool, too, because they do the Middle Eastern trippy thing as well. But they're all disguised as well. And everybody thinks it's a shtick. But it's not, because it's like they're more concerned with, you know, the performance and the music as opposed to being, you know, identities on stage, right? You know?
You could argue that that is there, like the Residents.
Right.
Or right. With Olivia Tremor Control, they did it too. You know, you could argue that that is itself identity.
Right, true. That's the thing. When you try to be a non-entity, you're actually becoming an entity, yeah.
We used to have a band here in Melbourne called This Is Serious Mum, or otherwise known by their acronym TISM. And they all went around with like masks and bed sheets on their heads, but they were definitely doing that as their shtick, so they could sing politically incorrect songs and get away with it. Because it was rumored that during the day they were all lawyers and barristers and TV personalities, and they could never get away with it if it was known that, you know, that these respectable daytime guys were being very naughty boys at night.
Right.
So I think they definitely did it as shtick. And to
in the case of the Residents, what I think that they were actually doing it, you know, as opposed to just it being an identity with the eyeballs, I think that there was a rotating number of studio guys and musicians in the Residents, and it was just two guys specifically that were the core of the Residents, and then the other four guys and the background people were just all rotating musicians. So I think that's why they decided to wear masks or kind of, you know, take
so
that
really,
anonymous
like,
persona.
Really, it was Steely Dan.
Yeah.
Thank another band. And since we actually, like, I don't know what Steely Dan looks like anyway. I don't know what any of their backing musicians look like. You know, it could have been them.
Yeah, sure.
They're also non-entities. We just produce
Stranger things have happened. Yeah.
Right.
I think Goat and Master Musicians of Bukkake, they're channeling that Sun City Girls thing as well. Cause
right, absolutely. Yeah,
they're
yeah.
doing that kind of faceless, non-identity kind of ethno pillaging, but well, is it pillaging or is it? I don't know. But
I like that there's bands out now that are putting out those, like, they're almost putting up like those whole album side songs. You know, like I like that now that there's those bands. They're coming back to what they did in the 70s, where, you know, you had those 17 minute songs that can just trip you. You know, you just throw the headphones on and you're gone. You know, like Acid Mothers and, you know, Master Music and Goat. Yeah. You know, like I love that kind of thing. No, I was going to say, aside from that, the only thing I did last night was I actually sat down and I watched Akira Kurosawa's Stray Dog for the first time.
Oh, nice. What'd you think?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was probably one of the best noirs I've ever seen. And I think now, like, it's amazing how Kurosawa was influenced by Ford, but then actually, and everybody got influenced by Kurosawa. I went back and forth between the East and the West, you know, like in terms of influence. And I think that with Stray Dog, it was a total same thing, where I think Kurosawa was completely influenced by the noir from America. And then, in fact, his film Stray Dog actually winds up influencing a whole another generation after that. So I think it's kind of interesting with him how things go back and, like I say, bounce back and forth in terms of influence.
I've got my own little story about my viewing of Stray Dog, or my first viewing of Stray Dog, which was I'd gotten a copy from a local flea market, which may or may not have been Criterion Edition, but it wasn't. And it had not exactly, it was more like Pidgin English subtitles. So basically, after the first, it took me about 15 minutes to sort of get the handle on, okay, I see what you're actually saying. I get the gist of what you're saying, but it's very frustrating rather than reading a correct set of subtitles. but you get inadvertently some gems. So there's one bit where the detective who is he's you know doing his investigation to try and find the gun that's been stolen from him off the bus. He walks into this place. He's looking for this guy, and he asks, "I want to find this character." And they say, "Oh, in the pidgin English version, they say, oh yes, he's a rather sexy man." And they say, "Oh, please lead me on to this erotic man." And then when I saw the Criterion edition, it said, "Oh yes, please show me the way to this ladies' man." And I just so sometimes nice. The pidgin English version isn't too bad a thing. So all right, so just briefly, my thing, I went. Yesterday, it's not often I go to a film during the daytime, hardly ever, and there's sort of a completely different vibe, but just thought, you know, we had the afternoon available, so we left Amelia with friends, and Joe, Max, and I went out to see Birdman. Which is only just started here. Oh, you shit stirrer, give it a rest. However, I will say I came out sort of, I'm undecided. I was having this discussion with Max saying, tell me, do you think that this is an exercise in style over substance? And because he's primarily more into visuals. I mean, that's what, you know, he loves Lynch and I'm probably going to be hanged for saying this, but you know, like his favorite film or just about favorite film of all time is Eraserhead, and I can't stand it because I just.
Yeah, Blue Velvet was my favorite film from the time I was 15 to the time I was 30.
Yep, and so, what happened?
So, I don't know. I think I finally had to admit that there are just other things I liked better, perhaps. Yeah,
but you still like Blue Velvet, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's yeah, still well,
top. No, look, absolutely. I mean, I love other Lynch, but Eraserhead looks to me like you know a very earnest student film, you know, with something deep right. and meaningful to say. And you know, both our listeners are probably going to sort of write into us and say, you know. What the fuck does this guy have a right to be having a film discussion podcast anyway if he doesn't know the genius of Eraserhead? But
right.
So that's why. Anyway, look in
the
end, I definitely say
when we discuss Angelo Badalamenti if we're doing that as an episode.
Right.
Other than that,
okay. The music of the music of Badalamenti. Yep. Absolutely. He's yeah. Okay. So he adds plenty to the Lynch vault.
Have you seen Birdman, Wendy?
I have it on my hard drive. I haven't watched it yet. Yeah. I confess I haven't gotten to it yet. But it's funny. Okay. Yeah, like some people I really respect have told me that like, oh, it goes on a little long and like it is, you know, a little, you know, it beats you at the same sort of points. But I mean, I just want to root for Michael Keaton. I just want Michael Keaton.
I love Keaton.
I'll tell you something. Look, you know what? I've never sort of given him much credit as a great actor, but everything that I'd seen him in, I really, really enjoyed. So, when I say everything, right. I've seen him in Night Shift, and he was brilliant. And one of my favorite films is
Mr. Mom.
It was Johnny Depp.
Oh, I forgot about Mr. Mom. No, okay, forget that. No, The Dream Team.
Yeah.
Love The Dream Team. And look, you know, he's playing the. It's not check cashing, but he goes through that like as a.
Right.
A typical 80s sort of tough guy, bad attitude with a heart of gold sort of thing. And it's
and
no,
he was,
no great acting chops.
He was one of the best parts of Jackie Brown for me.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. Jackie Brown, he was great in that. But in Birdman, he just pulls something out of the box. The acting performances are, for me, absolutely fantastic in this film. But after the first 5 minutes, you think, all right. I know what, okay, their shtick is that they're going to be using, the whole film is the illusion of one long tracking shot, apart from like a 2 minute sequence briefly, at the very end, but like a little bit before the end, there's like where they have some cutaways, but pretty much the whole film gives the illusion of one long tracking shot.
And I don't want to spoil anything, but I want to put something out there to you guys. Mm. Have you ever had a dream that you could fly? Have you ever had a dream that you've been out in public in your underpants? Have you ever had a dream that somebody killed you? Or, you know, you died in a dream?
Yes, no, no. Yes, no, I could fly. No to the underpants.
No,
being killed.
Yes, no. The underpants went yes, but the other two.
My, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. Here? Yeah, yeah. I agree with Morris. I thought the performances were amazing, and Keaton doesn't win the Oscar, I'll be very surprised. But I found that the whole film to be just far too cocky and full of itself, and look how clever I am, look how technically perfect I am. Right. It was just, I don't know, it just left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth.
I wouldn't say it left a sour taste in my mouth because I found the story enjoyable, but I think that it lacked a bit of heart. It was trying to be clever. I wouldn't say it was wankery or anything like that because I can admire, I mean, look, I've seen films which tried far too hard to show how impressive it was. And yeah, okay, so this was an exercise in style, but at least it was an interesting exercise in style. And the story about someone at the tail end of his career wondering what, you know, do I return to what I did before? Because he's got the monkey on his back. And I thought the poster is brilliant, you know, with the Birdman character on his shoulder. It is the monkey on the back.
I thought it was a great tale to tell.
It's just,
that's the thing. I don't think it is an exercise in style. It does have some depth, but it's just the way that, you know, as a technical piece of filmmaking, it's just, it's crying out, you know, look how amazing I am. Give me Oscars. I'm brilliant. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just contrary. You know me. I'm always knocking the stuff that people seem to like. So I don't know. If you all hated it, I'd probably think it was the best film ever. So I'm that shallow, I'm afraid.
Can I say, I'm sure this is a whole other rant to go on, but like, you know, like everybody's been upset the Oscars are too white this year. Oh, it's too many white people. Oh, it's horrible. White people are awful, whatever. But it's not so much that it's too many white performers, too many white movies. It's too many boring biopics and too many of these like very obvious, you know, like I could give two fucks about a whole movie about Alan Turing. Or, you know, like, I don't want to, especially
now. I saw that, actually. I saw Imitation Game, and it was okay, but again, it was worthy. You know, it was just like, yeah, whatever. And we've also, my wife and I, we get free tickets to our local cinema every week, our little art house cinema, because we do some cross-promotion with them at one of my jobs. So we get two free tickets. And The Theory of Everything has been on for, like, the last 3 weeks. And even, you know, if there's nothing else on, we still haven't bothered going to see The Theory of Everything.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't fucking care.
It sounds so boring. Like, and I think that every, and like Selma, like, okay, I'm familiar with Martin Luther King. I know it's important, blah, blah, blah. But you couldn't drag me to see that. Oh God. Or my hate movie this year. The movie I refuse to see, but I'm just going to rail on it. Reese Witherspoon Goes Hiking.
Oh,
what the fuck that movie is?
Here's the thing. Yesterday we saw the trailer for that again. Like, I think I've seen it about three or four times over the last 3 months, and I thought, fuck, I thought we'd avoided that. Is that film still yet to come? Joanne's whispering to me, oh, remind me, I want to go see that film. And oh, no! She said, all right, I'll go with one of my friends.
Isn't it so brave? Well, the hiking.
Why couldn't they have combined that with that film, you know? Who was it that did it a couple years ago where he got his arm stuck in the rock
James
and he
Franco.
Had to cut? James Franco. Well, they should have done it with Reese Witherspoon, you know, where she goes hiking and then she gets her arm stuck in the rock and then she has to saw off one of her arms, right? I'd pay to see that.
A mashup of that and Into the Wild, where, you know, Reese Witherspoon has to, you know, gnaw her arm off and then dies of some stupid reason anyway.
Yeah, she eats some stupid berries, yeah.
Yeah.
Or I would like to see a mashup of this and Mad Max Fury Road, and she can just, you know, explode in the first 3 seconds of the film. For me.
We have to see the greatest Reese Witherspoon movie ever.
Yeah.
To be fair to Reese Witherspoon, she actually is in one of my favorite films of all time. Freeway. Have you seen that?
Oh, okay.
I just watched that recently.
That's a blast, man. Like, that film is a total blast. Like, that's one of my favorites, you know. Like, one of the best performances she ever did, and one of the best performances that Kiefer Sutherland ever did. Yeah.
All right. We're going to have a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss everyone's favorite instrument, the air guitar, and more specifically, a documentary about a competition related to air guitar. It's called Air Guitar Nation. So we'll have a quick break and we'll be back shortly. You're listening to See Here Podcast.
Eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
bet you thought something big was coming up. This is Terry Frost, and I want to tell you about my new podcast, The Martian Drive-In. In the podcast, me and a guest will look at obscure but interesting speculative fiction movies. The ones that don't get enough love. The obscure movies that you catch late at night you can't remember the name of, but you really like them. You can go to marsdrivein.blogspot.com or subscribe to the Paleo Cinema feed in iTunes. The Martian Drive-In Podcast. Watching the skies since 2012.
Air guitar is a lot like jumping off a cliff. If you stop and think about it, you're kind of wasted, really, and you just do it.
It's totally about freedom. And you don't have to be a rock star to be a rock star.
It's just about listening to it and just going...
I would say at its height, it's performance art.
It's judged like figure skating, and it's probably less absurd to watch than figure skating if you think about it.
I get a call, and that's my mother.
Yo, I'm CNN.
I've been hoping to reclaim my title as the true East Coast air guitar winner.
Two words come to mind, sore loser.
He's got nothing on the inside. He's like Elmo.
Don't get me wrong, I don't want to hurt him. But if he goes against me again, he may get hurt.
The World Air Guitar Championships in Finland. There were people from all over the world. There were national champions from New Zealand, from all over Europe. There were media from all over the world. The most surprising thing was there was nobody from the United States.
There's never been a U.S. representative at this contest.
I have one motto, and that's keep it real. You're there to play the guitar. That's what I'm gonna do.
We're back from break. Thank you for joining us on See Here Episode 13, the music film discussion podcast. I'm sure the previous half an hour wasn't terribly indicative of that, but from here on in, we're discussing music film, I'll tell you what. And so there's myself and young Tim and young Bernie and young Wendy and old myself. And we're going to be talking about a little film released in 2006 by the director Alexander Lipsitz. It's called Air Guitar Nation. My first official question, before we go into talking about the film, I want to ask you guys, this is the big question. What are your air instruments of choice? Going around the table, Bernie.
I know that you and Wendy are drummers, and I actually used to play drums when I was younger. I was in several bands.
That's right, yes.
So, you know, I'd have to say air drums, I'm afraid, because I'm just useless at anything else.
Mm.
So I'm sorry, because you're probably both of you guys are going to choose the same one, but I'd have to be an air drummer, I'm afraid.
I'll reveal that in a moment. Tim, are you an air musician?
Well, initially, I think it, you know, air guitar makes about as much sense as interpretive air fucking.
There's a composition for that too.
You know, it's just
no, seriously.
Is that an Olympic sport?
Here's a question. Okay. Here's a question to you, though. Mm-hmm. If you are going to jam air guitar, what is your jam?
Oh, anytime, I'm going to confess, anytime I'm ever out in public and I hear a Rush song, I drum on my legs. I air drum. I do that.
Okay.
Tom Sawyer, Spirit of Radio. If I'm out somewhere and I hear that, that's it. It's on.
Okay.
I'll come to my main air instrument of choice in a moment. Which will be a little bit of a surprise, but if I do a bit of
air guitar... It's the air oboe, isn't it, Morris?
You're nearly right. You're nearly right. It's from the same family of instruments.
The air bassoon.
Don't go stealing my thunder. You're hitting too close to home. If I'm doing air guitar, I tend to sort of be more of a rhythm air guitar player. Not for me the lead stuff. I don't like that. Whereas, you know, I guess because it's more percussive, you know, doing the whole rhythm sort of thing. And like if I hear something like Joe Jackson's I'm the Man, I tend to, you know, the harder sort of up and down rhythm playing, that's my jam. So yeah, I'm the Man or anything with a hard sort of rhythmic element to it, I guess.
Hard and rhythmic.
If I was going to,
I wish I hadn't said that. Now I wish you hadn't said it like that, Bernie.
I'm sorry. I really shouldn't drink and record. I do
it's
apologize.
It's the British. It's the Benny Hill in you, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a genetic thing. We can't escape it, I'm afraid.
Right.
If I was going to play air guitar, and if I was going to play air guitar, I think it would either be a combination of three. It would either be Cowboy Song, Thin Lizzy, Super Stupid by Funkadelic.
Oh, yeah.
And Search and Destroy, Stooges. Mm-hmm. Those would be my three.
My air guitar song would be Get It Up and Get It On by Harvey Milk. Don't know if you're familiar with them, but that song in particular, it's like ZZ Top jamming with the Melvins or something. Just absolutely amazing.
Right.
So my air instrument of choice is keyboards, actually. I don't know why, but for years I was a big, well, I still am, I guess, but I used to be like a really huge Rick Wakeman fan. And I just imagine that I was, you know, like as a kid, I was wearing the cape and I was surrounded by a bank of keyboards. I mean, we all know Neil Peart is like a kind of 360 degree drum kit, but, you know, Rick Wakeman, he had the complete surround sound thing. And I just imagine like I had my right hand in front of me, my left hand behind me, and it was just playing something incredible from like, you know, Six Wives of Henry VIII or Journey to the Center of the Earth. And I really dug that shit. So, I mean, look, yeah, okay, I do the air drumming as well, but really, it was more the air keyboard thing. I play drums anyway, so I might as well do the air for something I don't play. And yeah, Rick Wakeman and the air keyboard thing was definitely where I was at.
Morris, can I ask you, did you spend a lot of time alone in your room when you were younger?
Why, yes, how do you know?
Air keyboards is, I don't know, it's kind of a giveaway, I think.
Oh my God. I'm calling my shrimp.
I'm sorry.
You motherfucker.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not.
No, I didn't think so. All right, so we've now established our air instruments of choice. One other thing that I'm presuming that'll come up later on in the show because of a specific instance in the film, but it occurred to me, which it probably should have earlier, is that the air guitar... It, what I guess makes that sort of more like the choice of instrument to pretend that you know how to play is the Freudian phallic connection. I mean, when you play air keys or air drums, you're not pretending that you're playing with your willy like you do with air guitar. Right. But there's, I mean, look, I've already alluded to it. There's a moment in the film where there is a guy who is literally playing with his willy.
Oh, goodness, yeah, there is. Yeah.
I was like, what? Where the...
Yeah,
but we'll get around to that.
But you know, shortly. I was gonna say the one thing that really sticks out for me with the whole
sticks out
that really about the whole air guitar phenomena is it's like, you know, you should know how to hold a guitar even if you're playing air guitar. Mm-hmm. You should know how to hold a guitar, and I mean, you know, this film wasn't called Ukulele Nation. Because it looks like half these guys look like they're playing fucking ukuleles. Either that or they're like they're filleting a chicken, you know? It's just like, you know?
All right, look,
they could call it a Lute Nation.
Lute.
Right, exactly. Mandolin Nation.
And some of those guys were playing mandolin with the backboard like a long way from their chest, you know? It's...
Oh, exactly.
Mm.
Oh, you know?
So, all right, look, let's do a quick synopsis of the film. And I don't know about you guys, but really, because this film is, it's fun, but it's so slight, I'm okay with spoilers. I don't know. What about you guys?
No, it's fine. All right. There's no spoilers to it.
It's like 7 or 8 years old now as well. So, I don't think it's an issue.
Won't necessarily have seen it, but look, okay, so the film basically follows the fortunes of two Americans, both from New York City. One of them is a guy called Dan Crane, who goes by the name of Bjorn Turok, and another guy called David Young. I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced.
David Young,
also known as C. Diddy. And Bjorn was, I think, a computer programmer, and as it turns out, a real guitar player. And he composed the song and sings on the song and plays guitar on the song at
during the, end credits,
the closing
yeah.
credits. Yeah. And C. Diddy was an actor and comedian, and they both take part in the American East Coast qualifying heats of the very first American Air Guitar Championships in 2003. So there were these guys who basically sort of caught on to the fact that they've been holding for a number of years air guitar championships in Finland, and America had never been invited. And they basically sort of thought, well, you know, hang on. Americans invented rock and roll. Americans invented air guitar. We are going to go into that competition and bring Team America, fuck yeah, into the world arena of air guitar greatness. So it basically, I mean, we get to see other, you know, air guitarists from the East Coast and the West Coast and from around the world when they finally get to Finland. But of course, because the film is really more following the closely, the fortunes of C. Diddy and Bjorn Tarock, we know that really that the competition is going to end up being about the two of them.
Right.
So we'll reveal a little bit later on who actually wins, because you really can't sort of talk about this without spoiling that. And as we get closer, if you don't want to know, we'll reveal it closer. And you just sort of
I wanted to say
it.
One thing, just as it's sticking out in my mind, I wanted to ask you guys, When C. Diddy was on stage performing, some of the faces that he was making, all I'll say is this. Did you guys see, you know who Victor Wong is?
No.
Nope.
You know, the Big Trouble in Little China?
Oh, yes, of course. It's in everything, yes.
Yeah, you know, and he was in the Carpenter's... Prince of Darkness, right? Well,
okay.
Right,
yeah.
He totally looks like Victor Wong. He's got that face when he's on stage playing. He's got that total. I'm looking, going, holy shit, that's Victor Wong playing air guitar.
So look, there are several ways that we can approach the story being told here. Before we discuss whether the film works as a film, let's discuss how the director approached the subject matter. So, okay, if you didn't know that it wasn't a mockumentary, you might sort of think, all right, this is like Spinal Tap, right? But it's, you know, they try to make this, you know, as a documentary, but they don't do it as a film that's poking fun at these people whose aspiration is to be the best at what they're doing. They take it seriously. Now, I'm in two minds about this, because I sort of think, well, you know, I don't want to fall into the sort of Emperor's New Clothes type of thing where I'm saying, yeah, these guys followed their dreams, which is pretty much what everyone else in the film is sort of doing. They're being very, very serious about it. And yet I'm sort of glad that they didn't sort of follow them and say, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, these guys are really prepubescents. You know, they're 30-year-old guys who haven't grown up yet. It takes that approach. But how did you feel about it?
You know what that kind of reminds me of? You remember American Movie?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Shit. Long time since I've seen it. But yeah, I do.
Right. Like, that was that same kind of thing where, but at times it felt like they were totally poking fun at those guys who wanted to make that movie. But it was like, you know, it was like this sort of heartwarming underdog, like, oh, these guys totally should have a shot, you know, but at the same time, you know that, like, what they're doing is just dumb, you know, so it felt kind of like that to me, mm-hmm. in that they weren't, you know, they were just letting it reveal its own silliness without directly having to say, like, isn't this dumb, you know?
But, I mean, they sort of go in and out between footage of the finals or them walking around town and interviews where, like, you know, they take them apart into a separate room, a la MasterChef or something like that. And like, there's moments where, you know, they're saying, where, any of the competitors are saying, things like, oh, well, you know, I'm having a bit of fun with this. And then there are moments where they change persona. Dan Crane becomes Bjorn Tarock and he's saying, oh man, I can't believe I didn't win that final. I'm going to have to find a way to get myself to Los Angeles and show them what I've got, because I know I'm the best at this. And I'm thinking, you're claiming that you're the best at that. You're the best at pretending to do something that other people have taken.
It's almost like those people that are schizophrenic, you know, or, you know, like somebody who suffers from a head injury or something, and suddenly they think they're a nuclear physicist, right? And everyone's just like, you know, you either indulge them to a point, or you just say, listen, dude, we got to talk.
What? Well, let me roll up onto the sidewalk and take a look.
certain points during the film where I kind of thought, now, hang on, take a step back here. Is this actually documentary? Or are they actually acting a little bit here? Because, I mean, it's no secret that C. Diddy is actually an actor and comedian.
Right.
And just some of the stuff seemed a little too, I don't know, not studied, but it just, some of it didn't feel genuine to me. Yeah, some of it felt like, you know, the director was saying, well, let's do this here, let's push this. And it kind of felt like some of the people, particularly Bjorn Ta Rock and C. Diddy, were kind of in on it, and perhaps it was, you know, it wasn't as genuine as perhaps it was making itself out to be. I mean, I don't know. That's just the impression I got. I don't know what you guys think.
In hindsight, that sort of makes sense. I'm even wondering if some of those filmed interviews took place after the action had actually taken
place. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. And even the crowd, because, I mean, it's like, you know, when C. Diddy comes on after Bjorn in L.A., then, you know, he comes on after, and then the crowd starts booing him. Because it's like, you know, you're an East Coast guy, man. This is the West Coast, dude, you know?
Yeah.
And then they start booing him. And by the end, like within 3 seconds, the crowd's kissing his ass, you know? And it's just like that. Like instantly, he just wins them over like nothing, you know? And
reality, you think it was edited like reality TV shows? You think that like maybe there was a little crafty maneuvering behind the scenes to make this?
I don't know if it was just the editing. I think, you know, some of the people were in on the joke as well. Some of them were acting a little bit. Some of it was not scripted as such, but I don't know. Some of it just didn't feel genuine. When they get to Finland, for example, and there's that like big mansion where they're giving lectures on how to you know what I mean? Like on how
they
and how to look after your guitar and stuff. And it's like
groupies and all that shit.
Yeah.
I spent the whole film wondering, hang on, is this a genuine sort of loving documentary of a bunch of eccentrics, or is Nigel Tufnell going to come out any second now?
Right. I was going to say one thing is that what is it with air guitar about the compulsion to just run around and just have yourself an epileptic seizure? Because, you know, it's like... I mean, Robert Fripp was a guitarist, you know. I mean, Mark Knopfler is a guitarist. Billy Zoom is a guitarist. I want to see the air guitar of Billy Zoom, you know, the guy just standing there smiling, just playing guitar, you know. I don't need to see the guy doing backflips off a fucking wheelchair, you know what I mean? Like, I don't need to see that. I want to see the guy... I want to see his technique, you know. It's like, if you think you know how to play guitar, then show me that, you know, you could pass. If somebody was to put a guitar in your hand, then it would look like you were actually playing that thing instead of, like I was saying earlier, filleting a chicken, you know.
Right. Okay, well,
dude, I got to say, though, Tim, if you went to see King Crimson and Robert Fripp started doing backflips off a wheelchair whilst he was playing, your jaw would be hanging on the floor, man.
Hey, listen, very quickly, I've got the DVD here, and on the inside cover, there's the actual list of the official rules and the judging criteria for the competition. I just want to read from the judging criteria, which they do actually sort of mention in the film, but I'll read it out quickly for the listener's benefit. It says, the performances are scored with the figure skating scoring method, i.e. the judges give points on a scale from 4.0 to 6.0. The scores from the judges are added together, and the person with the most points wins. The score reflects the quality of the performance based on key criteria. 1. Originality. 2. The ability to be taken over by the music. 3. Stage charisma. 4. Technique. 5. Artistic impression. 6. Airness. Airness is defined as the extent to which a performance transcends the imitation of a real guitar and becomes an art form in and of itself. All right, so Tim, really, effectively, the technique of which you talk about, as opposed to the filleting a chicken, is really only 1/6 of what they're judging. So it doesn't matter if they look like they're filleting a chicken. If that's their shtick, then they're fine with that. And evidently, you know, because like C. Diddy did look like it, and really Bjorn Ta Rock, as far as air guitarists go, looked like he was playing a guitar.
Because he's a real musician.
Right, correct. Yeah, that's right. And I think he was Rob. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
C. Diddy all the way, man.
Spoilers! C. Diddy wins. Oh, sorry. I warned I was going to give it like a 1 minute thing. All right, look, never mind. But
good night, folks. We'll see you next time. But see, well, it's interesting that now that you've spoiled that, now that we know the seed that he wins, it makes sense of what you're saying, because Bjorn can obviously play guitar. He's a musician, and he's, as far as realistic air guitaring goes, he was better than C. Diddy. But C. Diddy was a showman. It was a performance, and it was...
Oh, you don't think Bjorn to Rock was as good a show? I definitely thought...
I think C. Diddy was much better. I think C. Diddy, he won,
C.
and he should
have
won.
C. Diddy had a costume.
Well, and so did Bjorn to Rock, with his stupid little bloody op-art... bloody black and white shirt, his tie and his little blazer and his hipster fucking bell bottoms.
Yes, but Jesus. But he went and wrote "Make Air Not War" on his chest. Bernie, he wrote a slogan on his chest. That's got to count for something.
Shaved into his chest hair.
Sorry?
C. Diddy. C. Diddy was a regular Law and Order Special Victims Unit. David Young was on several episodes of Special Victims Unit.
Really?
Now, can you say that? Like, Bjorn to Rock.
Well, here's the thing, man.
That's it.
I mean,
that's it. Nice.
What was that line? What was the line that I loved it that Bjorn had at the beginning? To air is human. To air guitar is
divine.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That was great. That was great.
You know, hey, can I go off on a side tangent thing here? So, I take, like, occasionally I'll take, like, a hip-hop dance class at the gym, you know, like, I'll do that once a week, and every so often we'll do, like, a quote-unquote rock song, you know, like, we'll do whatever fucking Maroon 5 or whatever passes for rock, and they always integrate, like, the stupid guitar moves, and I hate it. I hate it so much. Like, I'll adamantly, like, I will not make fake guitar moves while I'm dancing around at the gym. I'm not doing it.
Right.
You need to do Zumba instead, Wendy.
I fucking hate Zumba.
See,
why am I not surprised?
This is the thing, too, is that when, you know, when Pete Townsend originated with the whole windmill, what he should have done was he should have stabbed himself in the stomach with a knife at the same time while he was doing a windmill, and said that the only time you can ever do a windmill with a guitar, you have to stab yourself in the stomach with a knife, right? So that way it would have prevented an entire planet from ripping off Pete Townsend's windmill, right? It's like he does it once, it's painful. The only way you're going to do it again, make it painful, right? Yeah. Like, you know, because so many people are just doing the windmill. Like, that's
strangely, none of them in this competition. I was thinking of one other guitar player who they didn't try to emulate, regardless of whether they did it wrong with their hands up the chicken fellatio end or something like that. That no one did a Hank Marvin. What is it with kids nowadays?
Oh, yeah.
Because at least, you see, there's the thing. You got the choreography. I mean, really, none of these guys, there's no clever foot technique. There's no clever hand technique.
There's no Chuck Berry.
No.
There's
no Dr.
Chuck.
Yep. No Dr. Feelgood, you know? No. No, exactly.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I'm calling this competition out.
Yeah.
Can I say, I approached this film, I'll be honest, I didn't expect to enjoy it, because, again, I'm going to probably upset some people now, but the whole concept of air guitar, to me, even though, you know, I've got my air guitar song and so on, it's stupid. It's pre-pubescent
boys
in their bedrooms.
Yeah, exactly.
And the kind of people you see in this doing air guitar are the kind of people you would talk to for 30 seconds at a party, and then you would just move to the other side of the room and avoid eye contact with them.
Now, we've just got to lost half our audience, you know that.
They're doofuses. You know,
who I felt really embarrassed for? And he's a good sport to do it, but I really felt embarrassed for Tom Morello.
Oh,
what
man,
was he doing there?
Yeah, he was one of the judges. But you know what? Who I was worried about, because I'd forgotten that Tom Morello was in it, but Brian May goes and sends words.
Yeah.
We're talking about, I'm not a Queen fan per se, but you know, Brian May is a brilliant technical player. And
well,
it was a real Spinal Tap moment where one of the, you know, the greatest technical rock guitar players is giving words of congratulations and encouragement to the greatest people who, in their own minds, who pretend to do what they could not do, what he does in a million years.
Right.
But it's all a big joke, though. Surely he's doing that and he's thinking, yeah, this is all really stupid. I'm going to do this because it's a real laugh.
Right. They're just going to put a whack of money in a briefcase and he's going to walk away with it, and that's it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Maybe.
Surely, like, yeah.
I see. I wasn't surprised to see what's her face from Veruca Salt there.
Right.
Because obviously she hadn't been doing anything since the early 90s. She probably got the phone call and it was like, yeah, shit, yeah, I'd be really happy to do that. Yeah.
Here's one bone of contention.
Surprised.
If you like to gamble, I'll tell you how you land. You win some, lose some, it's still the same to me. The pleasure is to blame, make no difference what you say. I don't shave green, the only card I need is the ace of spades. The ace of spades.
Here's one bone of contention that I have that kind of always bugged me, like, about this film, was that they get them to play Ace of Spades, right? But it's like, you know, everybody's always thinking, oh, Ace of Spades, Lemmy. And it's like, no, it was Fast Eddie Clark, you know? Like,
exactly.
And a lot of people, they don't, who? It's like, forget it, you know? Like, I mean, it's not a bass song, it's a guitar song, and it was not played by Lemmy, you know, like, that's it. But I think it's funny, like, how so many people play air guitar to Ace of Spades, but they just don't have any idea who the guy was who played it, you know?
Totally, yeah. I was going to say, well, despite the fact that I think that the, you know, the whole concept of air guitar and even having championships for it is just, you know, it's silly, it's stupid, it's not the kind of thing I would really be interested in. I got to say, there was a point in this film where I relented, and I'll be honest with you guys, I did actually enjoy the film, and there's some pretty, I don't know, you couldn't help but warm to see Diddy, for example. I thought he was actually quite a nice guy, and he seemed fairly genuine, and there was a point as well, I thought Bjorn Tirok was a dick, up until a point, and then towards the end, when he's, you know, he's kind of beaten again, he's quite magnanimous in his defeat and so on. And I kind of warmed towards him a bit as well.
But to be honest with you, if he hadn't persisted, I don't think we'd have had half as interesting a story. And okay, so look, one thing. Okay, we've already gone and done the spoiler that, you know, C. Diddy wins. But one thing that I liked about the film was, even though I guess I always had this suspicion that C. Diddy was going to win, but the filmmaker sort of crafted it cleverly. So because there's C. Diddy goes and loses a couple of qualifying finals. He sends himself off. He pays off his own back or with sponsorship to go to the West Coast and then to go to Finland and compete, I think, as a
Finn. No, that's Bjorn, not C. Diddy.
I meant Bjorn. Pays his own way to Finland, and then he wins a qualifying final and gets an almost perfect score, I think. What was it, like 17.9? And you think, oh, it's going to be a competition. Okay. And it's paced really well in that way. I mean, that,
exactly,
that almost sort of brings back what you'd said before about, was this staged? Because that is like something out of a sports film, out of an American sports film, really. How they throw this curveball.
Isn't that the nature? Like, take a movie, for example, like Fistful of Quarters. You know, like, isn't that sort of the nature of, like, all these sort of competition movies, is that they have to do something to set up this rivalry, they have to do something to make it so this final, like, it doesn't matter, you know, they will edit it, they will maneuver it, like, however they have to give it that extra drama.
Blimey, it makes you think it's not genuine, because there's got to be some manipulation there to create that kind of tension, because real life,
and
you know, 9 times out of 10, that's not going to happen that way, so.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, you know, once again, do we come back and think that they were all in on it and this has all been staged, or it just, the luck of the draw came out and, you know, the director was, you know, thanking his lucky stars, thinking, wow, I can actually make this look like a conventional competition type of film. I've got a little bit of suspense here. No one's going to actually know till the end as to who really won. It's not a one-horse race.
Well, I think it's interesting as well that the director, since she made this, most of her career has been producing reality TV shows.
Right. Well, that comes as no surprise,
so that
because
kind
I was watching this,
doesn't it? Yeah.
I was watching this and think, this looks like an episode of MasterChef, except, you know, something a bit more interesting. But But it, you know, the bit of live footage, the going off into the other room and speaking to the competitor. But yeah, I'm now convinced that a lot of that discussion was done after the fact. I mean, all this competition took place in 2003, and the film didn't come out till 2006. So
yeah, right.
A film like that. We're not talking about a film with lots of CGI and special effects. This film should have been filmed, edited quickly, and just, even if it's going direct to video, should have gone straight out in 2004 at the latest. So,
also, it should have blown a CG budget, put guitars in their hands. That'd made an entirely different movie. I think that'd been very funny.
It would.
And, you know, one thing, too, was, like, we mentioned, we kind of hinted at it earlier, but, you know, in L.A., there's that dude that comes out in the wheelchair. And initially I thought, okay, this is cool, man, because, you know, they're going to basically, you know, put the competition up to everybody. And then the guy actually goes and totally destroys everything by standing up. It's like suddenly, you know, I'm cured of my polio. I can walk, you know, like, and he gets up. I'm like, you motherfucker, you know, like, God, man. And then it's almost like,
it just goes to show it's about theater, you know, it's not.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say was that, you know, I think it's funny because this might sound like it's a stretch, but I don't think it is, that you can kind of put air guitar in the same field as you put professional wrestling. I think because it's this idea that, you know, it's
fake.
Well, it's just not that, but it's about how well you can portray what you're doing, right?
Exactly.
How well you can sell it, right? And that's totally what it's all about. And I think that's where this kind of falls down to professional wrestling, because it's like, you know, like my granddad used to say, oh, it's a couple guys jumping around in their underwear in a ring. Like, what the hell, you know? But I mean, if you really look at it beyond just initially what it is, then you can really start to understand that, yeah, it can be an art form. Yeah, it can be interpreted any which way you want to look at it. But, you know, there's more to it than just, you know, some guy just standing there with a broomstick in his hand, you know, or whatever.
Overall, as a film, would this be a recommend for you for the listening audience?
Sure.
I definitely go along with that. Yep. Bernie, you sounds like you enjoy
it. Yeah, no, absolutely. As I say, I was kind of determined not to like it in a way, because I'm quite a contrary bastard, as you all know.
I do.
But it won me over. And as a film, the way it's structured, the way it's paced, it tells a story, it works quite well, and I gotta admit, I did quite enjoy it. Yeah, I'd recommend it.
Wendy?
Yeah, if nothing else is on.
I think
it's light, it's fun. If you don't want to offend anybody, sure, that'd be great.
Well, except for the prudes who don't like the idea of seeing an air guitarist actually sort of cheating by not playing the air and playing his Johnny Watt instead.
Now, you keep going on about this, Morris, but that scene was like, what, like 3 seconds at most?
What's your point? What's your point?
Maybe he's got the extended version, like he's got a director's cut where it's like 20 minutes left.
Yeah, that's right, the extended
version.
Hey, listen, you're the man who's called Stickwell.
I don't know what you mean. I can't help, that's the name my mother gave me. I can't help that.
Oh dear. All right, so I think that concludes our discussion of Air Guitar Nation, a fine piece of cinema, as recommended by 3.5 out of 4 Sahirians. So any housekeeping business, if you want to make some contact with us, you can join the Facebook group. Just look for C here, that's SEEHEAR. Facebook.com/groups/C here. You can contact us via email, cheerepodcast@gmail.com. And it's been wonderful for all four of us to be reunited. I'm sorry I wasn't there for the last show for 2014, but it was great to listen to you guys talk about Ginger Baker. And here we are, all four of us. So next month, we'll be back again together. Please get in contact with us with film suggestions. Or if any of you out there would like to join us for an episode, we're very friendly people. We'd love to have you join us. If there's a film you think you'd like to talk about with us, we're open. We're good people. All right, I think that's it. Okay, ladies and gents, thanks for the discussion today. It was most enjoyable. We'll be back next month. All the best. Cheers.
Yay.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
This is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.